We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Download the Odyssey app, favorite 95.7 The Game. It's where you get all of our latest and greatest anytime you need it, powered by DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. So I would tell you, if you can't get John Kincaid on your radio, you should probably move to the town wherever he's broadcasting. He's that good of a sports talk radio host. He's truly one of the best in the business. He's been a friend of mine for as long as I've been in the business. A lot of late night calls and a little advice one way or the other. He is one of the best, and I appreciate him coming on today because, let me tell you, he's from Philly. He's Philly down to his socks. Temple boy, won't hold that against him. Did 25 years in Atlanta, where he dominated like the worst sports town in the world. He was the best sports talk host for the worst sports town. You can go home again. He is back in Philadelphia doing mornings on 97.5 The Fanatic, and he joins us here on Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky. Kincaid, what's going on, brother?
Boys, I can only tell you that the one bad punchline to that entire story was that I somehow signed a contract to do mornings. After doing afternoons my whole life, to do mornings is a culture shock, a life-changing decision. But it's been a hell of a lot of fun being home. So exciting.
When's the last time you saw anything past 8:30 p.m.?
Oh, no. I'm like probably lights out 10:15.
Oh.
10:30.
Look at you.
I can do all right. And right now I'm in an apartment close to my radio station because I'm having a house built. So until I move into the house, I have a short little commute. So I can, pretty much roll out of bed. And I can't go to sleep without knowing exactly what the show sheet's going to look like for the next morning. So I pretty much can go to bed, put my head in the pillow, and know what I'm going to talk about. So I'm all ready for that.
It's why you're one of the best, man. So who is the city of Philadelphia glommed onto more early in careers with early impressions? Jalen Hurts or Sirianni?
Nick Sirianni. Nick Sirianni started out with one of the most bumbling press conferences I've ever seen. Just it was on Zoom. It was awkward. He was overhyped up for it. It went terribly. And there were so many people that had doubts, and I had doubts about it. I was like, man, this guy's got a very much that high school Harry type of approach. But then you got to watch him work, and we've gotten to know him and gotten to look at how he handles himself. And this city has sort of fallen in love with Nick Sirianni because he has, well, I think Nick Sirianni, he sounds like somebody who'd be from Philly. He is very all about the football. He knows how to relate to the city as far as he just talks to us. He's much better behind a microphone than Doug Peterson ever was. And this city loves Doug for what he did, but I don't think that they ever had that connection that he was a guy who really could articulate his vision. This guy articulates the plan and the vision really, really well.
Okay, well, let me ask the thinly veiled sarcastic question is, if they love Sirianni, do they trust him yet?
Oh, no. No, the big key is that they love the guy because he's been very honest about wanting to build a foundation and that they're sort of doing a reset and starting from scratch with learning everything from the basics to... So everybody went into this season with no expectations. I mean, for this city, I was shocked that so many in the city were like, if they win six or seven games, I'm cool. as long as the young players look like they're advancing. We see, we see Sanders, we see Goddard, we see Mailata, we see Jalen Hurts, we see those players looking like they're developing. I can't believe it, because I stepped back into this town. I said, this town's never patient. And they very much, overwhelmingly, there was nobody calling into our show that was saying like, oh yeah, this team's going to be 10 wins. This team's making the playoffs. Everybody knew what to expect coming into this year. Problem is, they go and dominate Atlanta. And if they somehow come out with a win over Kyle Shanahan on Sunday and the 49ers, this city will go berserk. And all that summer talk will be out the window.
Having watched him for a handful of games now, do you believe Jalen Hurts is a long-term starting quarterback in this league?
I can't. I'm not ready. I'm one of the few people in the town who doesn't want to make a rubber stamp decision on that, because so many things about Jalen I really like. First of all, from being in the South for so long and getting to watch Nick Saban and his program, getting to see games that, you know, Saban coaches, being at many of his games, I knew they were getting a guy that would be that got doctorate level training when he was in college, and then he got his sort of graduate year when he went to Oklahoma, and then they go out and they draft Landon Dickerson, who's going to be ready to play on the offensive line, and maybe even as soon as Sunday, and then they go and get Devontae Smith. It's been a distinct plan here in Philly to go get Alabama guys. To go get guys who understand how to be professional, how to be how to handle the moment, aren't going to get swallowed up by this stage, because we saw it with Carson Wentz. He got swallowed up by the city. He got swallowed up by intimidation. And the day that Jalen Hurts was drafted, Carson Wentz went into a shell. And I think he went from North Dakota State to one of the biggest hotbeds of NFL football that you could be in. And when he wasn't getting constant love and affection, he couldn't handle it. And that's not your – Jalen Hurts won't be phased. He's been in 90,000-seat stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where he couldn't even go – he couldn't even go to the convenience store without being, you know, mobbed. So he was more ready for this stage, I believe. I believe in Jalen. I need to see a hell of a lot more, I mean, I need at least another 10, 12 starts till I think I can make the real decision, thumbs up, thumbs down. Because I thought Wentz was – a long-term solution in the NFL that was going to really do great things. And one mental fragility took him right out. So I can't make that call yet.
Would you buy any Wentz stock in Indianapolis, where he's much further off the intensity radar?
Is it dirt cheap? You telling me it's like a penny stock? I'd consider it. We love Carson Wentz in this town for what he did to, you know, get 11 wins, the 11 on his jersey. He got 11 of those wins that got them the home field advantage, which allowed Nick Foles to then, you know, take them to the Super Bowl championship. But I think he's a mentally fragile guy. And I know that he's a mentally fragile guy. I know that he's not. He wasn't cut out for this. He wasn't. The minute that they drafted Jalen Hurts, he crumbled.
Yeah.
He looked at it as a slight. He looked at it as, they don't love me. And it's very strange. But he also, though, was not a locker room. This wasn't a guy who was leading the franchise, who was a guy that the veteran players are mobbing around Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts was working out in Lane Johnson's private garage gym during the offseason, bonding with his teammates, bonding with the offensive linemen. Wentz never did that. Wentz had more of an aloof quality to him, a lot of talent. But just, I don't think he was made. I think going from North Dakota State to Philadelphia was a little bit too much.
John Kincaid here on 95.7 The Game. Sports talk host out of Philadelphia, one of the best to ever do it. So, looking at the Niners coming into the year, the soft spot was that secondary. And they've already lost Jason Verrett. Their other starting corner, Mosley, right now probably is not. Doesn't look like he's tracking to play in week two either. So, when I look at the Eagles, the one thing that they got that the Lions certainly didn't have was speed and talent on the outside. I think that Devontae Smith and Jalen Reagor, if Hurts is looking to hit shot plays and hits like two or three of them, that could be the difference in this game.
Yeah, I think it could too. I think it's a distinct advantage. And the Atlanta game last week, the entire offense, the average pass attempt was 7 yards, so it was all short stuff. I don't expect that this week. And with San Francisco, I just wonder if he's going to get the time. And the offensive line had a very, very good game after the first quarter, and they are a very good veteran unit. If the offensive line can come through and give him some time, I think they're going to be throwing it down the field. And I think you're going to be seeing Dallas Goedert down the seam. I think you're going to be seeing Zach Ertz more involved than he was last week. And I do believe that they're going to be trying Devontae Smith, the speedster, get him out there. The kid is so impressive. Oh, my gosh. He's so exciting to watch. And I do believe it's going to take an entirely different offensive game plan to beat the 49ers. Plus, too, I want to see a turnover or two. Because the 49ers just, I have no idea. Kyle must be, and I hope Kyle's not listening. Him and I didn't really get along. The 49ers being sloppy with the football. Last year, I think, 31st in turnovers, in offensive turnovers. This year, three fumbles in the first game. That's got to be driving Kyle crazy. It's got to be just making him go nuts. Because I know what kind of an emphasis he puts on, precision and doing things the right way. So it's got to be killing him. And if the Eagles can take advantage of that, I think it'll help big time. And that defensive front is a lot different than playing Detroit.
Yeah, so on that topic, last week that defense bludgeoned a Falcons team that you're somewhat familiar with. Is that more Eagles defense being frightening or more Falcons offense being frightening for bad reasons?
It was the Falcons are going to be a 3-4 win team. So take that for what it is. And I believe that going in, they turned over half the roster of a 4-win team. So if you turn over half the roster of a 4-win team, I'm pretty much expecting you're not improving that much. And Arthur Smith looked absolutely like a buffoon last week, and I couldn't believe it. But the Eagles defense was turned it on and were menacing, and the rotation was great, and they were getting a lot of guys in. They were keeping guys fresh. The snap counts were amazingly balanced. I was very, very impressed. Jonathan Gannon, the young kid, the defensive coordinator, he's been my boy crush since they brought in this coaching staff. I've been obsessed with everything about Gannon, reading about philosophy, hearing him talk. He's won me over. And in fact, I've given him much more of my stamp of approval and confidence than I even have Nick Sirianni. I love what he did last week. He allowed two long drives to start the game, but when they got to the red zone defense was spectacular. It was creative too, and they really got aggressive instead of being passive. And for the rest of the game, they never laid off till the last series of the game. They did not lay off. It was aggressive, aggressive, aggressive. And after Jim Schwartz, who, if you were up by two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, Jim Schwartz was playing prevent and was playing soft. And the Philadelphia fans this week loved that the best. They loved the aggression, the four-quarter aggression. And I want to see more of that on Sunday because, look, I'm not fooling anybody. The San Francisco 49ers bear no resemblance to the Atlanta Falcons. None. Even beaten up. The 49ers are a distinctly better club than the Falcons by a mile. So they're going to have to play their A game.
I want to divert from football for a moment.
Sure.
And ask you a two-pronged question. One, is Philadelphia as sick of the concept of Ben Simmons as Ben Simmons is of Philadelphia? And two, can a shotgun marriage in which he has to stay there work for either side?
I don't think the shotgun marriage works, so I'll do number two first, even though I want Daryl Morey to do exactly that. Clutch Sports I keep hearing how Clutch Sports holds all the cards. They would if you weren't trying to trade a 78 Toyota, because a point guard that refuses to shoot, that doesn't have the guts to shoot, that was petrified to shoot in the last four fourth quarters of a seven-game series that you lost in seven games, is ridiculous. He's talking about mentally fragile, Ben Simmons. But where the difference is that Philadelphia universally supported this guy. He got standing ovations every playoff game. He got standing ovations when he went to the foul line, the crowd standing, cheering him. He never got booed in this town. He hasn't gotten booed once, ever. This town supported Ben Simmons blindly, wanting to get the best out of him. They wanted him to succeed, and he just doesn't have the succeed gene. He'd rather be, posting on Instagram how great his life is, and he's not worried. He lost the seventh game, but look at my Bentley. Look at my house in L.A. Look at my Instagram girlfriend. Look, I'm at Wimbledon. He's like a teenage girl on Instagram, and I don't think he's got the killer instinct, and my buddy Shaq and Charles Barkley have been burying him, and I'm glad they've been burying him because it's deserved. I think that Daryl Morey and the Sixers, though, at least from what I'm hearing, are just saying, we'll wait for the deal we want. I think they want to wait till in season to make a deal till somebody either needs him or you get towards the trade deadline and they can do like a Harden-type deal. But I don't believe they want to kowtow to what Clutch Sports wants to do.
I mean, they basically asked for everything but the Golden Gate Bridge from the Golden State Warriors for Ben Simmons.
I guarantee you they did. And the Warriors are a dumb organization. And so, I mean, I don't know. I got to tell you this. I know that Steve Kerr could look at the skill set of Ben Simmons and say, Ben Simmons is the best guy in the NBA to getting three-point shooters the ball. He led the NBA in it this year in Philadelphia. Imagine if he had the Warriors outside game. Ben Simmons would fit perfectly. But I don't know if he fits the culture. He's not a winner. He doesn't have a winner's mentality. He doesn't have a cutthroat mentality.
You can't be on the floor if you need a free throw. I mean, it's just that simple.
And that's what it is. And so to me, I don't know. If you're just talking about the Warriors, I respect the hell out of what they've accomplished as an organization. I can't believe they would ever want to bring that into their locker room. Because, yes, there's a skill set that he brings, and he's a tremendous defensive player. But he, honestly, he's another one, mentally fragile. And Shaq and Charles have gone on the offensive with it, and I like it. I may have begged Shaq to do it a little bit, but it's like, hey, you know, like let's bring this to the truth. This guy, I think he would drag the Warriors down, not lift them up.
John Kincaid here with us on 95.7 The Game. And look, sports talk radio hosts are like, you know, the weatherman or the weather girl. We can tell you it's going to rain, it's sunny, and we still get to come to work the next day. We're wrong about a lot of things. And my friend, you might have been wrong about Gabe Kapler. Are you going to send him a muffin basket or at least a bouquet saying, so sorry?
No, I'm going to send him a little quarter ice cream. He can put it in his mouth. He can suck on it and then spit it out because that's what Gabe does. Here's what I would say with Gabe Kapler. And I'll say it flat out. Gabe Kapler sucked here. And Gabe Kapler's doing a great job there. Both sentences are true. Gabe Kapler was comedic here. He didn't know how to manage a game. Even into his second season, he was bumbling as far as whether how to handle a bullpen, how to have guys warmed up properly. His high school Harry routine with all his little catchphrases and everything like that. I'm going to warn you guys. I think that he's having a great year this year, and he should be and get all the credit in the world for it. But Jim Fregosi had great year. You know, like there are guys who have great years, and God rest the soul, Jim Fregosi. But there are many managers who put together that year, and it happens, and it's unexpected, and then it's never sustainable. I think that Gabe Kapler also is better after crapping out in his first job. Bill Belichick, better after crapping out in his first job. Nobody in Cleveland saying, man, the Browns blew it. They had Bill Belichick. He was doing a great job. He was just better. No, he blew it. He was terrible in Cleveland. And he made a lot of mistakes, and he reformed them. Terry Francona, I've gotten the chance many times to talk to Terry when I was with ESPN. And I would say to Terry, you know, I'd make a joke on the air. I'd say, you know, I booed you a few times and just want to know. And he said, I would have booed me too. And Terry Francona talks about it. He was a better manager in Boston than he was in Philly. And so I think both sentences are true. I don't dislike the man, Gabe Kapler. I mean, I think he is a good person that I'm glad to see find some success, because anybody I think that fails, that dusts themselves off and becomes a better version of what they are, damn, I think that's something you cheer for. And I think he fits San Fran as a market better than he fits Philly. I mean, but like we're not used to our managers getting their eyebrows waxed and fake baking. That's just not big here. That doesn't go over well here. That's just not it. They want their guy to smash a beer can on his head. you know, and go eat a cheesesteak and be one of the, like, go down and high-five the construction workers. That's sort of what they look for here. And whether that's pandering to the fan base or not, that's sort of what they look for.
Right. No, I've always said Chip Kelly's biggest flaw in Philadelphia was when he brought up, like, nutrition shakes. It was over right there.
Oh, my God.
As soon as he wanted to have the smoothies, it was over.
Well, it was also over when he alienated everybody in that building. He alienated the whole organization. Even the PR people couldn't stand dealing with him. And one of the things you got to do is, you know, and many times, my radio agent told me many, many times, Norm Schrutt, the radio rabbi, you can Google him, he's a legend, passed away this past year. Norm flat out would say, don't be the squeaky wheel. Especially in an industry like radio, in an industry like coaching, in an industry, don't be the guy that the owner has to be putting out fires for one of their highest paid employees. Go to work, do your job, and do it well. And so Chip Kelly was a grease fire. And by the way, that wasn't Gabe Kapler either. Gabe Kapler was not a bad guy. Like nobody disliked Gabe. You know, and so that's why I think a lot of people are happy here. Believe me, I get people who still say, oh, he's doing a great job. I say, yeah, he is. He's doing a great job this year. It doesn't mean he did a great job here. And the Phillies are just so abysmal to watch, but they could still make the postseason, which is just absolutely shocking.
It's nuts. Harper, maybe an MVP? Maybe? I don't know.
I don't know how he wouldn't be in top of mind for the discussion.
But it's him or Tatis. That's it. That's a conversation.
If the Phillies win that division or even make the postseason, I think Bryce Harper's MVP.
I tell you what, man, I think you got a future in radio. You should look into it. Thank you so much.
I may. I don't know. Does it pay well?
No.
I've seen with your beautiful children, and I mean, it's the lavish lifestyle you live. If I could aspire to that, I think I'd take some of it.
Hey, you're the building one a house. Cut the crap.
You're building a house.
Yeah. Guess what? Building a house in Philly compared to building a house in Atlanta. In Atlanta, you get twice the house at half the taxes. And I'm not kidding. Twice the square footage and half the taxes. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, try coming back to San Francisco.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Here's how you build a house in San Francisco. You don't.
You don't.
Thank you, John.
Guys, you're awesome, and continued success. And maybe the Phillies and the Giants will meet in the postseason, and you guys will really be laughing.
Good to
There's
talk to you.
Matchup you want. Take
There's
care,
the guy. Love John Kincaid. One of the best, truly. Great to talk to him. I knew it was going to be an easy segment for all involved. Just ask a question. Sit back. Ask a question.
Let me ask a question now. We've had John on the show several times over the years. Am I wrong, or since he moved back to Philly, is the Philly accent coming out a little bit more?
Absolutely. It's like when Madonna moved to London. All of a sudden, she was a Cockney. You know what I mean? But, yeah,
I was waiting for him to drop a water on us at some point in that interview.
What do you like about the bagels? Well, you need the water to make bagels like that. Anyways, it's not a great bagel town. That's New York, all respect.
He made the Piggly Wiggly to Wawa transition very easily.
Very easily. Yeah. Great stuff with Kincaid. By the way, he drops that Shaq Chuck thing. He hosts the Shaquille O'Neal podcast. They became friends when he was in Atlanta. So, yeah, he still does that. And he really is. He's one of the best on the radio, on anybody's radio. Thanks to John Kincaid for stopping on by. We got to take a real quick break. And when we come on back, man, we got an awful lot of Giants, huge leverage baseball to talk about, and Niners Eagles. So stick around. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the pitch, hit, and run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7, The Game.
You know, I think 49er fans were so excited with the Dre Greenlaw interception return for a touchdown, they didn't even really notice that he hadn't made another play in that game because he did not play after he made that play in the game. And that was something that Kyle Shanahan was talking about this week here. Here he is on when Dre Greenlaw got hurt.
No, I mean, it was bothering him in camp and stuff. Started to get better. I think he retweaked it on that pick six. That's when he started complaining about it. We took him out, hoping that calming him down, it would get better, and it just hasn't this week. So we had to make that decision. I know guys who usually have had that are around 4 to 6 weeks, hoping it's that, but you never know.
You never know. Hopefully he, you know, got everything tied back together in the surgery instead of just getting a little scoped or cleaned up, and he will... He will get back to the Dre Greenlaw that I think was really becoming one of the better linebackers that the 49ers have. You know, we've talked about this. John Dickinson, I think, brought it up yesterday that if we were putting together the list of the best 49ers defensively, if he wasn't your fourth or fifth, he wasn't falling out of the top six for sure. Like, he was one of the more important players that this season had coming up, and one man's lost opportunity becomes another man's opportunity. That man is Azeez Al-Shaair, and here's Kyle Shanahan on him.
I thought Azeez, you know, live, I thought he was one of the best players on the field, just flying around. I bet I looked that way a little bit on TV, too. And when I watched the film on the plane, it was confirmed. I thought he had a hell of a day, hell of a game, and he's got some playing time in for us over the last few years, and thought he had his best game there, and I expected to keep just getting better.
He did pop out in that game. You could see it with your own naked eyes. You didn't need to go to any snap counts or worry about where he was because he was in the middle of some big plays. And then it looked like he might have hurt himself, twisted his ankle on that damn turf. So he came back into the game, made a big stop in the game. And welcome back here to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Azeez Al-Shaair, this is your life. Let's see what you got, kid.
Yeah, when I saw him go down with the injury, that had he stayed out, I think I would have just said, well, this season's done. God has spoken. They're not going to stay healthy. The fact that he got up, and I know this has nothing to do with anything, but the fact that he got up should lead 49er fans to think that they might not be doomed health-wise yet. Because last year when a guy went down, he stayed down.
Yeah.
Azeez Al-Shaair and Dre Greenlaw share the same elite characteristic, which is speed. Now, I don't know if Al-Shaair is gonna be as good of a tackler as Greenlaw was. I think because of how good Fred Warner has been, Greenlaw's been a little underrated. I mean, he has really been excellent for this team since the day they drafted him. But Al-Shaair is super fast, and that's what you want out of that position. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, I think. You touched on an interesting point because I think Warner has made Greenlaw better too, because it's allowed Greenlaw to not have to overcommit to things that he might otherwise have to if there was just a league average linebacker next to him. So I don't know how good he is in a vacuum, but he hasn't had to deal with the vacuum yet. So, you know, to the extent that people want to know how good Dre Greenlaw can be, the answer is in part is, well, tell us how good Fred Warner remains.
I mean, Fred Warner was instantly just a smash hit from the minute he stepped out on the field. He is the most, he belongs in the league linebacker this team has had. Well, I mean, here's the deal. It was so funny. Chris Borland looked really good, and then he's like, football's not for me. I'm not in. So he got out. I don't think it's that far of an exaggeration to say that Fred Warner is very much cut in the same cloth as a guy like Patrick Willis. I mean, insane speed in every direction instantly makes everyone around him better, to the point where guys get so better around him. I'm not saying that Azeez Al-Shaair, Dre Greenlaw, when he gets back and healthy again, is about to become the next Navarro Bowman, but you had the best linebacker in football in Patrick Willis, and then the guy next to him would be the only guy that you would make an argument could be as good, if not a little bit better, than Patrick Willis. That's how good Navarro Bowman got playing next to a great middle linebacker. So those guys are like keys that unlock defensive players around them.
No doubt. I will say this. They may have been cut from the same cloth, but Fred Warner was cut from a significantly smaller piece of granite.
No doubt about it. Yes, yes.
Because Willis was just, I mean, that's the difference from a really good linebacker and a Hall of Famer, maybe.
You might be right. I mean, size is not something you can teach. You either got it or you don't.
Size matters.
It does.
Thank you.
I've heard that.
Size is good. Is that where we're going with this?
It's where you went with it.
Okay. No, you have a dirty mind. I think we're just gonna cut to the chase here. You have a filthy mind.
Oh my God.
Should we get back to the Eagles' large upfront package?
You get back to that.
Look, Kyle Shanahan's the one talking about it, not me. But he is right. They are big up front. And then a little, like I said, softer in the middle. I just want to say softer in the middle without being disrespectful to linebackers who, if they walked in here, could beat our rear ends with their pinkies. I mean, there is no doubt that we would not do well in a fight with any NFL player, much less the Eagles starting linebackers. But Alex Singleton and Eric Wilson do not have an awful lot of pedigree or people trumpeting how good they are. And so when you got two middle linebackers that might not be just a couple of loaded muskets ready to fire at any time, you then go to the safety to say, all right, so what happens if you get past that defensive line, you get past that middle linebacker? Well, Rodney McLeod is out. He's their starting safety. And I want to come back to George Kittle, hey, diddle, diddle, go kick their ass in the middle. This is where this guy has just got to go. I want George Kittle force-fed in this game, the way that T.J. Hockenson was force-fed in that Lions game, the way that Waller got force-fed in the Raiders game. This is your best player, who I think gets used sparingly at times. You know, it's like
you
the break glass in case of emergency level talent that they try to not show you anything with. I don't think the Niners are in a position where they can just pull out a little bit of the playbook and win today. I think you got to get into it in Philadelphia.
I don't disagree with that general premise, but I will say, as far as doing damage over the middle of the field, Kittle is not the only guy on this squad capable of doing that. Deebo Samuel will eat you alive in the middle of the field if you don't have really sure tackling linebackers. And just in general, Kyle Shanahan runs guys wide open across the middle of the field. So that soft middle, if it exists, is definitely something that this team is built to take advantage of.
Yeah, and I think it's unlikely that they're only going to be able to run 55 plays in this game either. You know, that play total last Sunday was pretty much an anomaly because, you know, it wasn't like they ran the ball 60 times. I mean, they basically threw as much as they ran, but they just didn't have a whole lot of plays. And I suspect it's because for three quarters, they could do whatever they want whenever they wanted. And it took a lot longer for the Lions to build drives. So I'll be interested to see how this shakes out when they're running their normal 70 plays as opposed to as few as they ran on Sunday.
Yeah, Niners had a day full of chunk plays. That's why their average yards per play was 8 in that game. And look, they also gave the ball away twice offensively, and then the George Kittle rare hands mistake where the ball bounces off of his face mask on an onside, and that was another stolen possession right there. So three turnovers, none recovered, three fumbles, none recovered by the 49ers has an awful lot to do with the 55 plays they were able to run. And by the way, when you can drop 41 points in 55 plays, somebody knows what they're doing.
That's a good average.
That's a good Yeah. If you can be in the neighborhood of a point per play, you've done a really nice job that day. When we get back from this break, though, I want to ask you guys about the Niners' soft middle, because that is something that concerns me deeply heading into this game.
We will get right back into it in just a moment. Plus, we've got a little bit of baseball, and in our final hour, yeah, it's a football Friday. Push the maximum football button just to upset Ray as we go to break. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Push the
maximum. Maximum!
Are you okay, Ray?
I hate all of you.
Are you okay? You're going to be okay.
No, no, all of you. Every one of you.
You're going to make it through the
even,
show.
Even Kolsky, who had nothing to do with this.
you're going to make it.
You're just collateral damage at this point. I'm not going to. I'm thinking about trying to open up a new exit ramp on the bridge.
I wasn't involved, but I do support it.
Thank you very much.
Well, then I hate you too.
Well, I mean, it was that way before the damn sounder played. So you know what? One more time. Hit him again, if you would, please.
Maximum! Football!
Ray says the studio is number one.
Yeah. Look at it this way.
Oregon and Indiana get shut out 95-0 Saturday. Well, and I hope SC gets kicked out of the conference.
you might live up to its end of the bargain. Don't make that deal. I'm not saying that the Eagles should be referred to as the Birds, but Ray's rooting for them twice right there with some hand gestures. So stick around. Much more coming up, including a very angry Ray Ratto. What more could you want on your Friday getting home commute for your little happy hour, the cocktail that you'll be enjoying in just a little bit? Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome. Friday afternoon, our longest segment of the day. It's great to have you around for it here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game, getting you ready for 49ers Eagles, getting you ready for Giants Braves. We'll tell you what the Dodgers got coming up, because, man, the out-of-town scoreboard watching is just chef's kiss. Mwah. Beautiful. The rest of the way for all baseball fans and here in the Bay Area. And this is going to be a fantastic time of the year. I mean, September is going to roar between now and the end of it. So stick around. So much coming up, and then you're going to blink your eyes, and it's going to be the Warriors season. It's crazy how quickly we are going to hop into basketball this year. From the text line, you know, Navarro Bowman, there's one Penn State linebacker the Eagles didn't draft. Well, as Brian Baldinger said early, you could name every single linebacker in the history of Penn State. They've never drafted a home university linebacker for the Eagles. They've only drafted one linebacker since the 60s. So it's just extreme, and I guess that's a good way to stay soft in the middle. And Kolsky, that's what you wanted to talk about, coming out here and let's do it. What about the Niners? Has you a little worried about being soft in the middle? I'm guessing it's watching an unheralded, since Barry Sanders was there, running game kind of gash them a little in week one?
Yeah. A little, I think, is being charitable, isn't it? I mean, yeah. And it's not just that they got gashed here and there. It's the way it happened. It really seemed like the only thing that stopped Detroit from getting 5 unchallenged yards right up the middle anytime they wanted to was falling down by too many points in that game to continue running the ball. So I don't know that plan works against the Eagles. And as we know, watching just a little bit of Trey Lance, having a quarterback that can really run the ball only makes the run game more dangerous. So, you know, Javon Kinlaw is questionable right now. If he's not out there again, and even if he is, you can't have, whether it's Miles Sanders or Jalen Hurts or whoever, you can't have their first resistance being at the linebacker level.
I think in a little bit of a way that the Lions game was a bit of a sort of a false reveal, because I think when you face the Lions traditionally, you don't take their running game seriously at all, so you probably don't scout as hard for it. So I'm guessing that there's going to be a greater attentiveness paid to
what the Eagles do on the ground, just because historically the Eagles have had guys who can actually run the ball, and they've actually committed to running the ball from time to time. The Lions are one of those teams where, I mean, I don't know how you feel about DeAndre Swift, but he doesn't make me excited. So I'd be more concerned about Jared Goff. And as the game turned out, I mean, he did throw 57 times, but I think the Eagles probably have their running game's attention. And I think you'll probably see a much different approach than you did last Sunday.
The good thing about week one, where even though you win, there's plenty on tape that you don't like, is Kyle Shanahan had a staggering amount of tape to go over. Like, you want to coach this week, coach? You got some coaching to do. D'Amico Ryans, you want to get into the chalk? You can get all dusty with chalk talking about what didn't get right, and you are right. 130 total rushing yards were allowed to the Lions. That's 4.8 yards per rush. That is an unsustainable number. You got to get that down clearly, period, end of story. The Eagles, yeah, Jalen Hurts is a wild card to run. Miles Sanders, their starting running back, spent the entire week as questionable, and that cue has been removed. It looks like he is playing. Kenneth Gainwell, which, as it was pointed out on Twitter, Gainwell is a very good name for a running back. But Kenneth Gainwell, their backup, came in his first NFL action. He was a fifth-round pick, and he looked good, again, against Atlanta. So what does that mean? I do not know, except the Falcons usually and historically suck. So there you go. But you're right. Javon Kinlaw, if he's not in there, Kentavious Street and DJ Jones and Kevin Givens and Zach Kerr have an awful lot more work to do coming up than what they did in Detroit. And hopefully an awful lot of guys, you know, went over where they need to be, assignments, and aren't just going to get bullied. And when you want to talk bully ball, the Eagles do play it kind of up the middle. I mean, you've got Jason Kelce, obviously their long-established center. Lane Johnson, Brandon Brooks, the right side of that line is good, very good. So there is a problem waiting for the 49ers with the Eagles up the middle and on the outsides, because as we went over with John Kincaid and as we've talked about with Brian Baldinger and basically everyone we've had, they got speed. The way that you really weren't worried about Lions wide receivers, you need to be worried about Eagles wide receivers. They're good. They're fast. They cut on dimes. They make plays. And if you're Sirianni, like Kincaid said, you're probably coming up with a much different looking game plan than you executed against Atlanta. I'm guessing a couple of home run balls are going to be thrown up early, testing the Niners secondary right off the rip.
Who is the Niners secondary right now? I mean, if Emmanuel Mosley doesn't play, who is starting at cornerback? Put away the O, Mark Grandy. We know Diamador Lenore is probably one of those guys.
Well, Diamador Lenore doesn't come off the field as far as we know. He never missed a snap in his entire NFL career, that guy. He's Iron Man. But,
Is it Norman? Is it Ambry Thomas, who did not look as good as his fellow rookie in week one?
I wonder if Ambry Thomas dresses for this game based on they might have another running back dress for them. And I'm not even talking about Trey Sermon. But Josh Norman feels like the most likely candidate to be asked to jump in there. Dre Kirkpatrick, I don't think the plan
he just got here.
I don't think the plan was to dress him or play him, but sometimes, you know, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. And the Niners secondary got punched in the face with an injury, and I'm dressing him if I'm out there. I mean, Kaywan Williams, I know he's Mr. Slot. Maybe he's got to go to the outside. I do not want to. I don't think anybody wants to see a whole bunch of Dante Johnson this weekend, I'll tell you that much.
No. I just don't think you monkey around with Kaywan Williams. He's the one guy in the secondary, he's the one corner anyway, who's playing in his position and doing it well. So I feel like moving him outside, you might make two positions worse. At least leaving him in the slot, you know you have one of the better slot corners in the league.
Yeah, I think he's probably the one guy who right now could be considered bulletproof in that grouping. Just because, A, well, as Matt said, he's playing where he's supposed to, and B, he's doing what he's supposed to.
I don't know how many three wide receiver sets you're going to be looking at, though.
That's fair. You might be looking at, you know, Dallas Goedert as effectively your third wide receiver.
Right.
If a tight end doesn't block, is he a tight end? I don't know. That's probably a longer conversation for a different time. But I just
it's a Jimmy Graham conversation. It's called the Jimmy Graham.
I'm concerned though about, you know, moving someone out of a position where they thrive. If there was another slot corner on the team that was really good, fair enough. But I don't know that they have that either. And boy, I just keep thinking, doesn't this reflect an off-season mistake? I mean, now that I understand you did not expect Jason Verrett to get hurt, but given his history, you had to acknowledge the possibility. And after an off-season where the only improvements you made to your secondary were late draft picks, you're now signing guys off the street in the middle of the season. And not even the middle. After week one, you've got two street free agents in because of how many players you've lost. And we knew the secondary was shorthanded. I can't help but think if the Niners could go back and do it over, they would commit more resources to the secondary in the offseason.
So, I mean, they drafted two corners. You know, you got to give them that much. They did draft two corners. Now, they might not have been premium. And this is where the rubber better start meeting the road on Trey Sermon. Like, if Trey Sermon doesn't eventually show up and play well, as high of a draft pick as he was, knowing that that could have been a corner that you know you needed, probably more than you needed running back depth right there. Like, that felt like Kyle Shanahan didn't think he was going to be there and likes him, so he drafted him. And then, oops, what do you know? He didn't even start week one. Didn't even dress.
Well, and here's the other thing, right? If we're talking about picking guys up off the street once the season's already begun, what do you have more faith the Niners can make work? A running back off the street or a cornerback off the street?
Oh, that's a trick question. Of course, it's the corner. I mean, the amount of dudes that Shanahan cranks into 100 yards gained that day is the list is longer than draft picks almost. So, yeah, no, you're right. I mean, how about this? If we're doing a postmortem on a season that didn't go well, I think we can return to this point and say it'll be right up there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they had several areas they had to address immediately, and I tend to wonder whether they thought they could address them all, and one of them was going to have to go naked, and they chose this one. I mean, because they did pound a lot of money into the offensive line for obvious reasons, because that was a problem. They drafted a quarterback very high because that was a problem. I think they might have just had a half a tub of butter, and they sort of ran out of spread before they ran out of bread.
Well, the old country crock scenario.
That's imagery I love. Bread and butter, baby.
Welcome to your 5 o'clock hour, everybody.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.